started, I would say, back in late 2000 or 2001 as a more or less pure research project at Saarland University in Germany. And the idea was that at that time, and I think this is even true today when you're looking at multimedia computing, then this is kind of a PC-centric approach, meaning that you have basically your multimedia PC, you have some devices attached to it, and then all multimedia computation you do is using these directly attached devices and your local machine. And if you're using the network, well, the best to do is streaming predefined content from the internet, that's all. And I think this hasn't changed a lot since 2000. But of course, we have many other multimedia devices in our environment, and the number is constantly growing. And I think the interesting thing is here that today you have set-top boxes running Linux, or at least you can put Linux on. We will have mobile phones running Linux, for instance, from Motorola. There's one announced for this year. Of course, we have PDAs running Linux. So the general idea was to allow to integrate all these devices in a big picture. And that's the goal of the network integrated multimedia middleware, which is currently running for GNU Linux, for PCs or PDAs and ARM processors. It's licensed under the LGPL for the core, and most of the plugins are licensed under DPL, so that's similar to what the guys from GStreamer did. But it's implemented in C++. Okay, so the aspects of NMM are, first of all, network integration. And this means that you can extend the cooperation between devices to the network. But that's only one part. I think the more important part is that you can control all your devices in the network. And then, of course, back in 2000, looking at multimedia and GNU Linux, it was like, well, there were those wonderful drivers and libraries available, but there was no uniform architecture back then. Of course, GStreamer started at that time, and we also looked at GStreamer back in 2000 or 2001. But basically, it was not suited for what we wanted to do. And finally, NMM is a middleware, which means it's a layer between your applications and distributed systems. And we will see later on what this means exactly. So since we often realize that people are just not familiar with all the benefits of distributed multimedia, I will first give you some examples of what you actually now can do with NMM. And most of these things you can do since a year or so, so it's not a high-end feature of NMM, it's just something that's there. So first of all, as soon as you allow access to distributed resources, you have a distributed processing power. And of course, this is more efficient. And then you also have access to distributed devices. So a very simple example is, you have your laptop, you would like to watch TV. There's a TV board in some other machine somewhere in the network. So now it should be fairly easy to write an application that does so, and that also allows to control your remote TV receiver, for instance, for changing channels. And I think as soon as you start to think about, okay, what can I do if all these applications are so easy to develop, then there are a lot of other scenarios that come to your mind. For instance, something like a drive-in cinema with a stationary system and a number of PDAs, where you render the video of a DVD on a large screen, and then every user has maybe a PDA and can access a different audio track of this DVD. And of course, then you want to have a synchronized playback between these different devices. And that's something we're going to show in the demos later on that Michael has prepared. But there are a lot of other things. For instance, some dynamic stuff. So the idea here is you have something like a MP3 player or a Orbis player on your PDA, on your mobile home, you're listening to your music, you come back home, and there's this great high fidelity PC or audio system that is somehow connected to your network. And now what you would like to do, you would like to hand over the current playback to the stationary system, and then just continue your playback on this device because, well, it has high fidelity audio and all that stuff. And of course, these are just some examples. And now, of course, you can say, well, I have this set-top box and I put some Linux on it, and now I can do some streaming from the set-top box to my PC. So what is this NMM all about? Well, basically, this traditional client-server stuff is like a black box. So you have a black box, that's the server, you have a black box, that's the client, and now there are a lot of things that still have to be resolved. So you have to locate the server, maybe you have to activate it, you have to know what functionality does the server provide, you have to connect, you have to know the stream data format, and maybe you can realize this with classical, traditional client-server streaming, but as soon as you want to control the server, well, there's basically no way to do so. And complex application scenarios, how to do that, yeah. And like, if you want to distribute your workload, if you want to synchronization, if you want to have shared applications. So basically, what we try to promote it is that it's not a question of if you can use a client-server approach for doing distributed multimedia. Yes, you can, but I think it's more important to know that it's a question of how easy is it to develop distributed multimedia applications. And therefore, the idea is to generally solve all these challenges within a middleware, within NMM, and then just give the developers the abstractions and programming model. They can really easily develop very complex distributed applications. And that's what NMM is about. So I'm going to talk about the architecture now, about developing plugins, and about some of the basic facilities NMM provides. And then we're going to look at some applications, and Michael is going to show some great demos. And, well, this includes some more advanced services, but you will see this later. And finally, of course, we'd like to discuss things with you. So, nice thing is that GStreamer and MIS already introduced this concept of a pipeline, and pipeline is called flow graph for our architecture. And just to give you some terminology, so in NMM this is a very simple approach. So we simply have these plugins, they are called nodes, and we have jacks that connect them and some formats to type these connections, because of course you only want to connect some audio processing node to another audio processing node. So what you can see down here is a very simple flow graph that reads some data from a file, forwards it to a decoding node, and then finally it gets played back. And the interesting thing here compared to, well, say GStreamer, is that we provide object-oriented interfaces for all kind of interaction, for all controlling of objects. And this includes basic interfaces, but also very specific interfaces. For instance, if you have a source node that kind of can seek in data stream, we have a specific interface for this. And of course, we can have typing and subtyping for these interfaces, which is very nice, because then you can just say, okay, I don't know exactly what kind of plugin this is, but as long as it supports this interface, then it's fine for me, because that's what I want to do. Okay, and then we have messages that basically forward media data or control information, and there are basically two different types of interaction. So we have this kind of out-of-band interaction, as we call it, from the interfaces to the plugins, and then we have in-stream interaction, either downstream, that's the usual way, so from sources to sinks, or if you want that, you can also stream messages upstream. So in its very core, NMM is basically a messaging system. That's all. And as I said, we have buffer and buffer objects, and these are managed by buffer managers and so on. And then we got these things called composite events that store a list of events. And event is basically a single method call. And now, the interesting thing here is, well, you want to make things as easy as possible for your plugin developers, for your application developers, and therefore we chose the same approach for both these out-of-band events and in-stream interaction. Because as soon as you start to develop plugins, you realize it's not only about streaming multimedia data. You also need to insert control information into your data stream. Otherwise, you won't be able to realize complex applications. So this is maybe the most important slide. So NMM flow graphs are distributed. And this basically means that everything, every node can run on a different system. And your application can also run on a different system. And the nice thing here is make life as easy as possible. This is completely transparent for your developers. But of course, we don't want to have some overhead for all these parts of this flow graph that are running on the same system. So I'm going to show you later how this basically works. And what I mean with transparent is that, well, if you know how to write a locally running application, then you're fine with developing a distributed application. It's just a single line of code that's different. Okay, so I'm just gonna skip through some architectural elements of our NMM. So first of all, if you're talking about interfaces, it's always a question of how to define them. And for distributed systems, you usually use something like a higher level language, an interface definition language. And we chose our language to be very similar to CoreIDL. And if you know CoreIDL, then you know that it's very similar to writing a C++ header file. Only some exchange in the keywords. And then basically what happens is, so here I have this interface for a file handling plugin, whatever this will be. You can set a file name, and this plugin should be able to handle an event called ntrack that is received in stream. And now the nice thing here is you can put all this information in just one interface definition. And this is just great, because then you already have the documentation for all the features that your plugin provides. So there's no magic voodoo, whatever, I don't know what this plugin is able to do. You can simply see, okay, this plugin implements this interface, so I can set a file, well, and it can handle ntrack events that are sent in stream. And what happens, so it's a kind of meta program. If you heard the talk from yesterday, we generate a interface class that is used within applications. And then we have a pure abstract class that needs to be implemented by some plugin. So you go and say, OK, I want to implement this set file name and the ntrack thing. Now, IDL for NMM supports inheritance, which is very nice, because then you can say, OK, I have a generic tuner interface for a TV receiver. And then I have specific subclasses. We have exceptions, and we allow arbitrary data types, which is in contrast to CoreIDL. So, okay, okay. These nodes are very similar to GStreamer, to Microsoft Direct Show. So it's always the same idea to have different types. You have source nodes. You have some kind of filter nodes. Take data from the input, do some stuff, and forward data to the output. You have multiplexer with several inputs. You have demultiplexer, you have kind of the mixed thing, and you have sync nodes. And well, it's fairly easy. So here's just some details about the life cycle of a node. So if you first get a handle to your node and it's constructed, and then you have to perform some state transitions so that it actually starts doing some useful things. And now the interesting thing here is that, well, of course, every plugin is different and might need to do some stuff before, for instance, being started. And then you simply have to implement this do start method, which is also very nice for a plugin developer. And just to give you a quick impression, so this architecture is stable. So we've realized more than 60 different plugins. All kinds of sources, for instance, for DVD with menu support, for TV boards, and so on. There are plugins for encoders and decoders, for most of the popular file formats and codecs. And for sync nodes, for rendering VU, VRX, or OpenGL, and so on. Okay, so this is also kind of to give you the idea how it works. As I said, it is completely transparent, and of course, if you ever programmed some networking code, that's really tough work. So what we said is, okay, basically what we need is some way to transfer objects over the network, and we need this for both this out-of-band communication for between interfaces and components, and of course we need this to be done in-stream as well. And there are these magic communication channels that basically do the job. And yes, as I said, they serialize and transport your objects. And now another nice feature is that's what we call scalable transparency. So for instance, if you're writing a distributed application and you don't want to get to know anything about the network, then you can just use some automatic setup. Or you say, okay, I maybe need to tune some TCP send buffer sizes in this case because I'm using a wireless LAN connection, and so I want to decrease latency, and then you can step by step go down in the networking stack and access different layers to configure your stuff. And well, that's maybe also interesting. We provide different types of serialization and of transport. So you can use TCP, UDP, you can use RTP, and you can say, okay, I want an efficient serialization of my data. Then we use just magic numbers to map basic data types to numbers. That allows us to deserialize the stuff again. And again, this is very important because that's somehow some of the moves of when you say we're doing distributed multimedia. In a case where everything is running on a single machine, of course we don't need to do any serialization or transport. And then basically we just remove these communication channels. And that's the most efficient thing you can do, and then there's no overhead at all. Okay, just to give you a quick impression of how easy it is to develop plugins, well, of course you have to decide what features do I want to support, and do I want maybe to have a big plugin that can do everything, or do I want several small plugins, which is of course a better choice. Then you might want to implement some of these state transition methods I've shown. And well, then you need to define or simply implement some interfaces depending on the functionality. And the basic thing is then to implement this process buffer method. And again, this is just to show you some code, so you will see that, well, that might be easy. And we have a plugin developer manual, so if you're interested in that. So what basically happens is you're writing a simple converter, you get a buffer, and you're allowed to return whatever message you want. And in this example, I just request a new buffer, and as I said, this is done very efficiently. Then I access the data of the incoming buffer, I do some stuff, I release the incoming buffer, and well, I return an out buffer. So this is just, you can look at this later, and maybe it's a bit too deep to explain it here. So that was just another example of what you can do. As I said, it's not only about streaming data. The other important point is handling control information. And for instance, just imagine this flow graph I've shown you. You read a file, and well, at some time there is no more data to read. So somehow you want the other plugins in the flow graph to tell this, and then you just simply send an in-stream event. And if a plugin wants to handle this event, it simply says, okay, I want to implement this interface, and then you just have to write, well, implement it, do whatever you want. For instance, close the file, close whatever you want, and well, return. That's all. And there are, of course, several other things, like if you have multiple input and output ports or jacks, then you need to do some stuff, but that's all covered in a separate menu. Okay, hello world. That's always quite interesting. And unfortunately, we didn't see any Hello World of MIS or GStreamer today. So what GStreamer showed was a automatic setup starting from a URL. And what you can see here is a manual creation of a flow graph. And that's again fairly easy. And I think the code is also quite nice to read. So so what you do is, well, you say I need a node for reading, for decoding, for playback. And then I add connections between these elements. And then from this application thing, I request a registry, and from this registry I get this flow graph, and then finally I set the file name to be playback. And this is also very nice C++ code. So for instance, these var types are C++ auto pointer, and basically what you do is you try to get this interface from the plugin, and if this succeeds, then you can simply set the file name. So this is just no magic strings, whatever, I don't know. Maybe it does support set file name, or is it called set location? So this is very type safe. You have an object to talk to. Okay, and then you have your flow graph, you start it, wait some time, whatever, you stop it, you release it. That's very simple. And now a bit of magic. So now you want to make a distributed application. All you have to do is to say, okay, in this example, I want the decoder and the playback to run on a different host. Maybe you say it's given with the command line. And the rest of the code is basically the same. Everything else I have to do is to add a handle to this remote host. Yeah. And again, there are a lot of further options for developing applications, like if your application wants to manually create flow graphs step by step, or if you want to get notified about events happening in your flow graph. And again, there is a manual for this if you're interested. Okay, so to make this all happen, we need some distributed registry service that basically says what's available on your host. And as you've just seen in this example, you basically can give your registry a description of a flow graph. And if then the locations for your plugins are not your local host, then we use a simple peer-to-peer approach to request plugins from remote hosts. So it's fairly simple, very intuitive. Okay, so of course we know GStreamer is out there. And I have this GST launch, I think. And we have something similar, but again, for distributed multimedia. So this thing is called Click for command line interaction and configuration. And again, simple MP3 player, not very interesting. And you can start this application like this. Or you can do more complex things, like in this example, you just use a text file, and in this text file it says, well, I want to receive a digital TV stream with DVB, and then I demultiplex this stream, I decode the audio and render it, and I decode the video and render it. And now the nice thing here is, again, you can just say host, whatever host you want. And then you can control this remote plugin by sending an event here. And this is just a simple text file. Give this text file to your Click application, and you have a distributed multimedia application. So that's, I think you cannot make it simpler. Then recently we developed a graph builder that allows you to create a distributed flow graph from a given URL, and we support URLs like file or audio CD, DVD, or different TV boards. So here again you have an example for playing back an MP3 file, and so then you don't even have to worry how this flow graph has to be set up. And here you have a where's my mouse? Here you have the URL for playing back a CD, and additionally you can say, okay, I want this title, chapter, and angle. And finally, again, it's distributed. So what we do here is, we say, I want to read this file from a host, and then render the audio and the video on different hosts. Yeah. And I'm going to show this in a quick demo. So here's basically the command line for this. So again, I only have two laptops here available. So I send this, read the file from my local host, and then I output the audio on a remote host and the video on this host here that is connected to your screen. So now we create a distributed flow graph, and as you can see, video is played here on this screen, and I'll just wait a few seconds.
Okay.
Yeah. So, so basically you can say I want audio on this host and this host, and what happens is that well, basically the synchronization also works distributed, and this is of course not astonishing, because you can call methods on remote objects. So to develop such a synchronization, it's also similar to developing a local running synchronization. But as of course you have a network somewhere in between, or might have, you have to strictly separate between what's happening in some plugin and what's happening in between different plugins. And for establishing a global clock, we need somehow synchronize the clocks in different hosts, and therefore we use this NTP protocol, which is kind of painful sometimes, because you really have to tweak it to run kind of good. So for instance, there are some main boards that, or some systems that just, well, you have to take your time to tune NTP to provide some kind of synchronization. But if you've done that, you will have like a millisecond between different systems. And that's sufficient for doing audio and video, but it might not be sufficient for every one of us for doing distributed audio. But we'll see later on a demo, and I think it's, at least for me, it's sufficient for many applications.
Sufficient bandwidth, so congestion. If the audio machine doesn't get enough data, does the video stop? Does some audio?
That depends. So there are a lot of parameters that you can tune. So basically, it's a kind of a master-slave approach. So you can say, this audio sync is the master, and as we heard this morning, you don't want to have any audio frames skipped. So basically, you can say your audio sync is the master, and then you can say, okay, maybe somewhere just unplug my networking cable and unplug it in again. Well, then I will lose some data, obviously, and there will be a break in the playback. But then again, there are a lot of parameters that you can tune, and of course we have some suitable defaults. And basically, the idea is then again to adjust latencies. So you can say, okay, this part of the flow graph now has to wait before the other part is back again or not. So you can tune your application there. Okay, now let's go to the applications. We also did recording and broadcasting of talks and lectures, and what we've built there is called the Virtual Courseroom Environment, which is a project done by a colleague of me. And basically it's about building this big hardware box here and about writing software. And now the idea is to have just this box here, take it with you, and then you have some speaker who has a laptop that might be running whatever, Windows, you use PowerPoint or Acrobat for playing the slides. Then we're using the VNC. Of course, it has to be installed on the laptop. We use VNC, that's protocol and implementation, for grabbing the display. And then we're recording audio and video of the speaker. And then finally, we put this into a file in Smile format, which is kind of a multimedia format that basically can integrate slides, audio, video, and vector graphics and all that stuff. And then you can play it back, for instance, with the real player, which is, as far as I know, the only player running on Linux that supports Smile files. And we've successfully used the system since winter 2000. So if you're interested, so for instance, this is our boss here. So if you're interested in computer graphics, you're free to download the lectures from winter 2000 and summer next semester, and you can just listen to audio and video. And of course, you will get on the right hand side, you will get the slides that were shown. And our newest version also allows to make annotations on your slide. Then your slides also show up on this touch screen here, and you can just make annotations, which is also a feature the professor often needs. Okay. Then we have an engine for Amarok, which is at the moment still kind of a hack, and it's not yet available, since we still need to do some coding, but I think Michael, you will show it. And so it's not very exciting, but at least it shows, this also runs with KDE. And actually, I find this idea of having a layer in between, so you can say, okay, I want NMM to be the playback engine, GStreamer, whatever else. And I think this is a fairly good approach. So as you can see here, we have MP3 file. You can see we have a timed update here. And as we use this graph building stuff, we can also playback video files, which Amarok is actually not, at the moment, not made for. And but it already works. So here's a video file that is just, the flow graph is just created. And eventually, sometime, that this will be a fully supported feature of our work. Okay. Okay. And now we have some more demos, and you might have heard of this project. It's called a multimedia box, and was for shown at CBIT last year and the year before. No, this year and the year before. And so the idea for this was to have, well, today this sounds kind of boring because a lot of people have done this, but actually we started this project back in April 2001, where we wanted to, at least for ourselves, develop a software that could run on some standard Linux PC that is kind of nice looking and not that noisy as the usual PC. And the software should provide all the functionalities you need in your living room. So you want to have TV, video recording, electronic programming guide, DVD, DVD grabbing, CD, CD grabbing. We want to have playlists and all that stuff. And so here you can see, I think this is from back in 2000, our first hardware and GUI setup. And this is from, I don't know, 2002 maybe. And this is our latest system running on some kind of smaller, bare-bone system. And so I know there are a lot of other projects out there, especially for Linux, that try to do the same. But the difference here is we use this application to extend our multimedia architecture. So we started in saying, OK, I want to playback a CD, Now, what does the architecture have to be able to do to support this feature? And so to this end, the application is completely built on top of NMM. And for instance, you can see this, we have a plugin for doing on-screen and overlays for audio and video. And as we will show in the demo, you're also able to integrate mobile devices or other systems. And this is somehow these refers to these application scenarios I showed in the beginning. So here again is what can be done with the software. And now we're going to show another demo that Michael has prepared. Okay, so this is basically the main menu, and of course, if you're sitting in your living room, you can control everything with your remote control. You can move from item to item. You can watch DVDs with support for menus. You can also grab these DVDs. And now the nice thing here is you can use a remote system for doing this time-consuming transcoding job. But we will now show the playback of a DVD, which always takes some time because there is this library out there that makes it possible to watch DVDs with this CSS encryption. And this always takes some time. Okay. So what's been done now is this is just a Linux DVD player. And what we do now is we connect a mobile system to this running application. And I guess you won't be able to see it, but feel free to come here and see the demo later on. Now there's a small interruption still when these two applications get connected. But now the nice thing is, now we have audio playback on my laptop. Yeah. On this mobile device, and we will just plug in some speakers so that you can hear it better. Now I will turn on both audio systems. Yeah, maybe just wait a few seconds. I think it will just restart this menu. Okay. Now I mute my system. I turn it on again. Yeah. You heard it? Okay. And now, of course, this is not all. This is a fully functional application now. And now I can control with my PDA my application on this desktop. And this is all synchronized. And of course, you can also see the video on this screen. And there is a very complex flow graph that is doing a lot of transcoding, a lot of downsampling of the audio and video, so that you're able to display it on this PDA, because this is just a very low power, strong ARM processor with 206 megahertz, so one of the later generations of the PDA. Well, you've seen DVD navigation works controlled with your PDA. Of course, you might be wondering if this is really a feature you want to have at home, well, it's technically it's possible. Okay. And I mean, the idea is also so if you're looking in the area of building technology where people are willing to spend a lot of money to have a display or audio system in every room. Now you could imagine you want to have your video playback or audio playback in your whole house, in your whole apartment, or, and that's something we're going to show now, you want to follow this playback to whatever location you're at. So imagine you're, that's our standard scenario, you're coming back from work, you're listening to your music, or you want just to sit down in your living room and enjoy your music on this system, or you're moving to your kitchen, you want to listen to music in your kitchen, and of course you don't want to say control another system, go to the track you've just listened and skip to the position you just stopped, but you want to perform this handover, we call it, in a seamless fashion. And Michael is going to show this as well. So what we do now, we also transfer the user interface. I have to increase the volume. We also transfer the user interface from the mobile device onto our stationary system. Of course you cannot see it, but now we have the same user interface here. And again, transparently we can control the audio output of this system. And we can also select another song. And now that you can hear that this is really a seamless process, we will put the audio back from this system to... Okay, maybe we can connect the speaker so we can hear it better. Okay, now the audio is running on the PDA. Well, that's basically this multimedia box thing. And just to give you a quick impression, so what we did, we connected running applications, and that's also a service that is in general provided within the middleware. So you can do this for whatever flow graph you have. And in principle, it works like you have a running flow graph, and then you want to create a new one. Like in this example, we have a flow graph. Oh, that's my mouse. We have a flow graph for DVD playback, again demultiplexing, decoding of audio and video. And now if we want to access a different audio track starting from this demultiplexing component, we have an algorithm that overlaps these two flow graphs, and finally everything gets connected to the synchronizer. And this other application, this handover, basically works like you have a running flow graph in one system, you kind of create a copy or a public copy on the other system, and then for some milliseconds you stream data through both flow graphs, and as soon as these two are synchronized again, you switch the playback and basically destroy the flow graph on the first system. And this currently works for audio playback. And of course, we want to extend this to work for arbitrary flow graphs.
So this would be appropriate for thin client situations where we could have actual sound playback on the thin client. Currently, there are a lot of contortions you have to go through to get that to work, where you have a remote X display and you would like to have the local system provide audio alerts and whatnot. And this would be an example of where that technology would be appropriate?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so this was just really a quick introduction, and there's a lot more things to look at and a lot more applications. So finally, I have to come to an end. So, well, that was the Network Integrated Multimedia Middleware, NMM, so you should remember. And unfortunately, so some people have problems with this NMM, but at the time, someone told us it was basically too late to change it in the source code, and we kind of felt familiar with this term, so yeah. It started as a research project and is also an open source project, so we would really like to see people getting involved. And I think it has a very simple, clear, and unified design. So unfortunately, we haven't seen a lot of code from the other projects, but I recommend that you just try to create a simple MP3 player, not a distributed, but just a simple MP3 player with the other architectures. And I think this would be very interesting for all the developers, for GStreamer, for MIS, for us as well. Because I think, as we heard yesterday in the talk about APIs, the code should look nice, it should be easy to develop stuff. And to this end, we think we have a very clear and simple design. And well, we are object oriented. We have interfaces, we have inheritance for interfaces. And we also say, claim that we have some kind of micro core architecture. And Well, you could say this means we have a very small core, then we have plugins, we have services, we have these transport and serialization strategies, but basically it's a messaging system, nothing more. And again, don't be afraid about distributed multimedia. There's no overhead for all locally running parts of your flow graph. So if you just want to develop locally running applications, there will be no networking at all, and you can even remove the networking code if you want. Okay, scalable transparency. You can see the network as a black box, or you can tune your networking parameters if you want. And now you've seen all these architectures. I think we have some unique features. For instance, these transparently distributed flow graphs, where you absolutely do not see the network if you don't want. Then we have this distributed graph builder, we have distributed synchronization, we have this session sharing, this connection of different applications, and of course something like handover is very easy to realize once you have all these features. And well, and finally, I think, well, it started as a research project, but there are actually people that use, for instance, the multimedia box, and of course we are using, for instance, this recording application since years, so we do have real-world applications. Okay, future work, well, update, optimize, and that usual stuff, and if someone is willing to help us with doing Debian or RPM packages, this would be great. And because we are absolutely dummies in this topic. And then we're working on stuff like also creating a streaming server, but a distributed streaming server again, because, well, of course, you can do all this middleware stuff, but anyway, you will have some Windows clients in the internet, and these clients will use the client-server approach for the next years. So of course there is still the need for streaming servers. And the nice thing here is that we're planning to also use overlay networking for areas, for instance, where you have no multicasting. You can then connect these networks and then use only multicasting in subnetworks and things like that. Well, and finally, there are some other topics, but finally, again, I would like to say we would really like to help to support other platforms, because as I said, currently that's running on PCs and on these PDAs only, and unfortunately we do not have access to other systems. And then of course we would really like to see people use it, and we would like to help as far as we understand KDE or whatever other project. We really like to help to integrate our stuff into that. Okay, that's it. Thanks.
Other questions?
Oh. We are running late, so please, quick questions.
I have a question, mostly along the long-term viability of NMM. What is the developer base that's behind it? Whereas we have GStreamer has a very extensive developer base, while Arts had one person for a long time, and when they went away, the project basically died.
Yeah.
So you said you had it was a research project. Is it a continuing research project?
Yes.
And are there more developers coming in the queue behind you?
Yeah. So from my point of view, a university research project is kind of similar to an open source project, but we do most of our discussions internally. And this is maybe a mistake, but we can easily change this. So if people approach us and say, okay, I want to participate, we also have a mailing list. There's only little traffic currently, but of course we want to discuss things. And the question about the project may be dying in some years. So I started in 2001, and my life at university might be finished at some time. But then there's Michael again, who will at least stay some more years at the university. And then there will another guy doing a PhD, hopefully, in this project. And we have a lot of students working, and we do have more requests from students that want to work in this project because it's kind of cool if you can do your courses and transcode your multimedia files at the same time. And so I don't think this is a problem. What's maybe not very well handled is the integration of external developers. But again, the idea was we do not want to force these things. So if someone says, well, NMM is nice, I would like to participate, then, well, you're heavily welcome. But we're not recruiting people in the internet.
Yeah, I'd like to make three comments. The first is, I was very impressed with what you did. I'd like to thank you for the work that you've done. I think it's very impressive. Second is, I would like to invite you to participate with a group of us who are trying to form an open project on the desktop from stimulated by XORG in order to look at these media issues collectively. Third, I'd like to raise a point about your last remark. I was at MIT at the time that that X was developed. It eventually lost MIT support. Part of the problem in those years with X was that it had no stable point. It tried to go from there, it tried to establish itself outside MIT and wasn't successful, and it was only in the last few years that that's turned around. I think you underestimate the complexity of what you're looking at there. I think it raises serious questions, but I don't think that should influence the role that the work that you've already done plays in the community.
Well, I mean, we just have a different opinion here. I think we just don't want to force things. Maybe we're just not, we don't have this marketing gene in us. So basically we want to have fun with this coding. Well, if someone says, well, let's move to freedesktop.org and I maybe can handle this, and great, yeah, but well, we just have different opinions. But I clearly see your point. Once the university will stop funding this, or the companies involved will stop funding this, there is always the chance that the project will die, but that's the chance for every project.
Helio?
Did you think about the low latency? And despite the fact that the kernel is guys of the kernel implementing on Linux the low latency patches, do you think it's possible you reach the needs of a pro audio?
We currently start to doing voice over IP. And we do this with an industrial partner who's coming from the building technology. So basically, if it's not good enough, we have to fix it. That's the answer. But currently, I don't know.
So we have Matthias and Tim, and then we are done.
You mentioned that you currently rely on globally synchronized clocks via NTP for this cross-post synchronization. When are you going to remove this?
Well, when basically your question is, when are we going to reinvent the wheel? Because NTP has been researched for years, and I'm not in a position claiming that I can do it better. And if you tune it, if you look at the output of your NTP for some days, you can bring it down to a millisecond. And I don't claim that I can do it better. So we will not remove it. NTP is nice.
So you're going to keep being dependent on the clocks being synchronized between.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but basically, if clocks are not synchronized, then NTP can tell you to what extent they are not synchronized. And of course, you can use this information as well. And what we have discovered is that if you stop your NTP server, you call NTP date maybe once, maybe twice, and you start your NTP server again. You will have a clock difference of some milliseconds. And this will come down to 1 millisecond in half an hour or so. So even if your systems are not synchronized in the first place, you can do this with some simple function codes.
A question about security. If you have computers, for example, doing voiceover, you don't want them to do anything they can with a
right computer.
How do you solve that?
Not at all. So we have not we're not considering security at all.
Would there be a possibility to do that?
Yeah, so for instance, if you share this application, so if someone shares your TV application, you currently can change the channel, and then you have to watch what the other guy wants to see. Yeah. And of course, we already thought about restricting the interfaces that a second application can access, but that's currently not implemented. And basically,
but it would be doable.
Yeah, so there definitely has some work to be done in the area of security.
Okay. Do you have any policies or plans for binary compatibility?
Yeah. If someone really needs it, then we will have to make plans. Yeah. But the nice thing is the separation between implementation and interfaces. I think this allows us to handle this topic a bit more painless.
How is your track record? How has your binary compatibility been in the last 3 years?
We haven't really cared a lot. So basically, we're just starting off as an open source project of getting other people involved. So basically, we only have external users that use NMM as part of their research project, as part of their personal fun, and send in patches. But so there have been no requests so far about this topic.
But if I understand, all your APIs and interfaces are C++ based.
Right? They are first of all described in this IDL.
Yeah, good. Yeah. But it generates.
Right.
C++. So what my concern is if the general multimedia framework is to be adapted, must be adapted by both big desktops, and I don't see how GNOME would be able to adapt to that.
The nice thing is that's meta programming. So we kind of sometimes we made kind of fun and said, okay, let's create C bindings for our interfaces just to tell people that it's possible. So of course you can just take this IDL and then create some other bindings from it. Yeah. So if you want that, maybe this will convince people from the C world.
Okay.
So
yeah.
One last remark. So if you want to see the demos again, just come here and see the PDA.
We'll now have a lunch break and see the program and continue.